This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
We're going to begin this hour with the NFL week number 11. Just about done. Tonight, the big one, Kansas City and Philadelphia. It's one of those regular season games that's like really fun to watch because the outcome isn't huge. It doesn't really matter. Like if the Chiefs win, you know, they'll go to 8-2. If the Philadelphia Eagles win, they'll go to 9-1. And no one will think less of Kansas City and no one will think less of Philadelphia based on the certain outcome. But it is one of those Super Bowl rematches that you don't get a lot of times in the NFL. But nevertheless, Sunday's games have really shaken up some images of teams. And we're going to get to a couple of those. But I'd like to start this hour with something that has been a common thread of what's going on in the National Football League, because just after we left on Friday came the news that Joe Burrow is out for the season with that wrist thumb injury that he suffered on Thursday night. We may have even had before the game. But if you look at the NFL standings and you go through every single division, you will find that there's a team in every single division that's lost its starting quarterback. Some divisions have had more than one. And that is going to be playing out as we look at the AFC, especially the AFC playoff picture, and how fluctuating it is now becoming. If you look at the NFC, for example, it's pretty solid. Philadelphia, Detroit, the 49ers, Saints in a weaker division in the NFC South. Those are the division leaders. Cowboys, Seahawks, despite losing to the Rams, Minnesota Vikings, despite losing to Denver. You go from a 6-5 Minnesota team at the seventh spot all the way down to a 4-6 team with Green Bay. But the AFC is an absolute mess. And part of the reason it's a mess is because now we are looking at teams without quarterbacks, and in their ability to get back into the conversation is going to be left up to, well, the backup quarterback. If you look at Cincinnati, for example, they're sitting at 5-5. They're 11th. Now it's going to be Jake Browning's turn to get the Bengals up into it in the division as well as the AFC standings. I don't know if he can do that. Burrow, yes. If Burrow was healthy, you would look at Cincinnati and go, well, they're not going to be down for long. Same thing with Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson is out. Didn't seem to matter against the Steelers in a really tight game, and a one that the Browns ended up winning with Thompson Robinson as they went on to beat the Steelers, kicking a last second field goal. But it really is amazing to me when we start these seasons with such incredible expectations based on, like in the AFC, for example, a plethora of quarterbacks that were going to override anything else that was going on in that conference. Everybody from Patrick Mahomes to Justin Herbert to Aaron Rodgers to even Deshaun Watson getting maybe a full season finally under his belt with the Cleveland Browns. Not to mention Josh Allen and Joe Burrow, and is Kenny Pickett for the real deal in his second year at Pittsburgh, and is Ryan Tannehill going to get the Tennessee Titans back to winning ways? I mean, all these conversations that we had all summer long, because that's what summer allows us to do. Summer allows us to sort of look at the picture from this big idea of how we're going to progress in the season. But we know that's not true, because we know that injuries are going to play a factor. Teams are going to overperform. Teams are going to underperform. And what we have right now after 11 weeks are injured quarterbacks that are not coming back, injured quarterbacks that are playing hurt, teams that have way overachieved, and teams that have absolutely underperformed. We've got a team like Denver, for example. Last night, they won their fourth in a row. Now, it wasn't that long, guys, that they were giving up 70 points to the Miami Dolphins, and Sean Payton's time in Denver looked like a complete bust in September. September. And we were talking about what the dead cap money hit would be on Russell Wilson should the Broncos decide to get rid of him. That's not the case now. They are a dangerous football team. There has been a click in the Broncos. They have beaten Kansas City. They have beaten Buffalo. They beat Minnesota. These are good football teams. These are playoff football teams. And now Denver's 5-5. And albeit there's a lot of this 5-5, 6-4, 4-5 kind of teams that are kind of hovering around the NFL right now, But the reality of it is that Denver's playing way, way, way better than when they lost to the Raiders, Washington, and Miami, where the defense couldn't stop anything. Right? Even in the loss to the Jets. To me, it really clicked in the night they played Kansas City in Kansas City. They lost 19-8. And I thought their defense was really starting to show signs of life. Since that loss on that in that game, they have won four in a row. Now, let's be honest here about Denver for a second. I heard Dan Orlovsky this morning saying that nobody wants to play Denver. I don't want to get that hyperbolic. I don't think that if I'm Kansas City, I'll take Denver every time. They may have beaten me once already this season, but that was to end a 16-game losing skid to Kansas City. Right? So I don't think the Chiefs are nervous about playing Denver again. But I do think that it is time to recognize a couple of things. One, Russell Wilson is going to be their quarterback going forward. There's not going to be this, let's get rid of Russ's huge contract and take the cap hit conversation that people were having when they were 0-3 and looked like not only the worst team in the NFL, but one of the worst teams in NFL history. Right? That's gone. He's played really well. He has 19 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. That's it. But he's not playing Russell Wilson-level football that we saw when he was in Seattle, when he was going to the Pro Bowl all the time. That's not the Russell Wilson you're getting. Second of all, I do want to calm things down a little bit from an offensive standpoint. They're still kicking field goals. I mean, they're still not putting the ball in the end zone. Cortland Sutton touchdown that put them up in late in that game, you know, it for the most part, the Broncos had many opportunities to put the ball in the end zone and had to settle for Will Lutz field goal. So they're still kind of doing that. But boy, what a far cry it's been from a point where they were 1-5, their defense was giving up 33, 34 points a game on average, and a lot of it is skewed because of giving up 70. It throws those stats out of whack. But even if you kind of just limited that a little bit, it was still one of the worst scoring defenses in the NFL. Look, they've been so good. They've been so good in this four-game win streak. They're still giving up. The defense is still giving up 27 points per game. That's what happens when you give up 70 in one. So that even when you hold a team to 20 points, 9 points, 17 points, you're not going to escape what that skill. That's like you got to get rid of that one and make it more like the bell curve, I guess, or whatever you want to do it in terms of mathematics. But last night was one of those games where you went, oh my God, Denver's now in the playoff picture too? So we're going to get to a whole bunch of these games throughout the hour this morning. Joel Klatt's going to join us at 45. We'll talk to him about college football as we've got we got rivalry weekend coming up. The college football playoff committee is now sort of, you know, all right, let's see how Florida State is Florida State still going to be around? Is Washington still going to be in that final four? We'll talk to Joel Klatt coming up. But this morning is going to be a lot about week 11 in the NFL because these games now, we are at that point where if you're certain teams, you can't afford to lose these games. And I'm looking at a couple of teams. I'm going to start with the team that I root for, and that's Pittsburgh. That game last night, yesterday, was absolutely atrocious. The Steelers' offense is bad. We know that. Their play calling is terrible. Everyone knows that. They've been outgained by everyone they've played. We know that. But they were 6-3 entering this game, and nobody knew how it was happening other than the defense was keeping them alive just enough for the offense to do something in the fourth quarter late that was decent, and then they would go on to win the game. That wasn't the case yesterday. Kenny Pickett threw for just a little over 100 yards on 16 completions. Their play calling is absolutely predictable, and the outside of Jaylen Warren's big 74-yard run, they didn't really do anything else. They really didn't do anything else. And this is allowing the Browns, again, under Dorian Thompson-Robinson, who's another rookie starter in this league, to get the Cleveland Browns to 7-3. And now in a division where the Ravens have lost Mark Andrews and the Cincinnati Bengals have got Jake Browning now the rest of the way, and a Steelers team that could implode upon itself because the offense does have to start doing something. Defense is not going to continue to win them games. The Browns could be a team really fighting with the Ravens for the division and getting into the playoffs. This is how big that game was, right? Deshaun Watson is out. This is your opportunity if you're Pittsburgh to go get at a rookie quarterback with that defense. And even though the Browns scored just 13 points, and even though he threw an interception, and even though the running game was held to less than 100 yards, and it wasn't like Thompson Robinson was throwing it all over the place, Matt Canada and the Steelers on the other side of it couldn't do a thing. Absolutely could not do a thing offensively, just like they've been all season long. So, again, I'm loving this playoff race from the standpoint in the AFC, from the standpoint now that you can go so far deep down to teams like Denver in the playoff standings and wonder where they are and where they're going to be. They are currently 10th. They're right there with Indianapolis, Cincinnati at 5-5, and again, the Bengals without Burrow. But even if you go, but if you are a team now at 4-6, Chargers, the Jets, you got to get moving. And you got to get moving pretty quickly. If not, if your season isn't already over. And look, to focus on some of the top teams, that's a given, right? Kansas City, regardless of their victory or loss tonight to the Philadelphia Eagles, top team in the AFC. Baltimore, top team in the AFC. Jacksonville, top team in the AFC. Miami, same thing. But when you get to Cleveland at 7-3 without Deshaun Watson, Houston at 6-4, and I'm going to get to why Houston's win was really impressive to me in a bit. The Steelers with no offense. The Bills coming back but still wondering exactly who they are. Denver on a 4-game win streak. Cincinnati without Joe Burrow. Which is more compelling? This disaster of quarterback up and down roulette? Or at the beginning of the season when we thought the quarterback play would be so good for everybody that had one that we would be wondering how in the world they could get 7 playoff teams. I look at the AFC now and I can see maybe 4. That's this crazy league. We'll get to the details of the games coming up and the coaches that are on the hot seat and the quarterbacks that have to play better, all that coming up.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Good Monday morning to you as we roll through. It's week 11 in the National Football League, but Joel Klatt is going to join us at 45 past the hour as we'll talk some college football with him. Again, Michigan with a win over Maryland. They hold on. They win yet again without Jim Harbaugh. The big game against Ohio State coming up this weekend. And also some other news and notes around college football. We'll touch base with him. But we're talking NFL after yesterday's games. And the playoff picture in the AFC continues to get muddy and continues to get a little bit more interesting. Listen, I was a lot like a lot of people. When we did our previews in the summer, it was so fun to look at these AFC teams that you expecting these, you know, quarterback play to be on a high level. And then in week one, losing Aaron Rodgers, you kind of knew this wasn't going to be the case for everybody, right? Like there were going to be some disappointments. There were going to be some injuries. But man, have they piled up. They have piled up. This year, we've lost Joe Burrow for the rest of the season. Aaron Rodgers likely won't come back. If I was Rodgers, I wouldn't come back in a lost season for the Jets, even if he could. You've got Deshaun Watson out. There is a team, like I said earlier, in every division that has lost its starting quarterback. Jimmy Garoppolo is now. I mean, look at the way the AFC, just the AFC alone, has lost quarterback play. Right? It makes you go, okay, look, where are we at in the AFC playoff standings? And where you're at is even teams at, 5-6, like the Raiders, are still alive in this thing. Because the top 7, if you want to just go to the wild card, the top 7 are Cleveland without Deshaun Watson, Houston, and Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh? I mean, how long is that going to last? Like, in all honesty, how long is that going to last? I mean, that's an angry football team right now. Najee Harris, of all people, is saying, I've had enough of this. That offense is pedestrian at best. Now, I'll tell you this. The team of that group that I was impressed with was Houston. Now, Houston beat Arizona, but this is an Arizona team that now has Kyler Murray back. But we talked about this on Friday. Here you are with the Texans. At the beginning of the season, you've got a rookie head coach and you got a rookie quarterback. They had the number 2 pick in the draft. They picked Will Anderson. They picked C.J. Stroud. You know, they're rebuilding. They once had this mighty team that led by double digits in Kansas City in a playoff game once upon a time, and since that moment, everything fell apart. They had one of the best defensive players in NFL history, and it all just started to crumble. So they're rebuilding. And then they started winning some games, right? Oh, we beat Jacksonville in Jacksonville and beat the Steelers, and now we're 2-2. Yay, okay, now we're 3-3 after a win against the Saints. Oh, now we're 4-4 after beating Tampa Bay. And then you start saying to yourself, wait. Those are real numbers. Like, those are real wins for this team. This kid is playing great. He's in an MVP-level conversation. This is a team that's overachieving. So here comes Arizona, and what happens now is, well, the Texans have kind of crossed over. This is what we talked about last week. You go from being a Texans fan, if you're a Texans fan, saying, hey, look, everything's gravy. I didn't expect this. Now, I just wanted to see growth in the quarterback. I just wanted to see what D'Amico Ryan's defense may look like, or the way he is a head coach and how players respond to him, etc. But now, here we are in November and late November, and the team has kind of crossed over the line to, hey, this is a competitive football team with a quarterback that doesn't make a lot of mistakes, and this is a team that is capable of beating other football teams about the same level. And maybe they won't beat Kansas City. Maybe they won't beat a Philadelphia. But they certainly can beat teams like a Tampa Bay. They certainly can beat teams like Arizona. And that win against Cincinnati really opened people's eyes. So they're favorites at home against Arizona. And I get it, it's the Cardinals. But again, remember, Kyler Murray's back. And the Cardinals, despite their record, have been kind of a tough out for a lot of teams. There's been a few teams that have rolled past them, but they've been a tough out for a lot of teams. And C.J. Stroud is making mistakes. He had 3 interceptions in this game. I mean, he entered the game with just 2. But yet, they found a way to win the game. They found a way to win it. And those kind of games, where you know you didn't play your best, where you know you left some stuff on the field and you shouldn't have, but yet you come away with a victory, albeit a team with a bad record, those are the kind of games that are going to build a lot of character, as well as going on the road and beating Cincinnati. You go on the road and beat Cincinnati, you're playing in a game that people don't think you're going to win, and you go out there and you show what you can do. And if you come up short, you come up short. And in the case of the Houston Texans, they didn't. But then you come home to play an Arizona team, and the expectation is, well, they should win now. This is a team they should beat. And to be honest with you, at any point, where at any point did they have games like that this season? Where at any point early did they have games where, with a rookie head coach and a rookie quarterback, even if they were playing somewhat decent, where the Texans expected to win? When you are expected to win and you find a way to win, even if you play bad, that says a lot. And right now, they are right in the AFC playoff picture. So this to me, as I said earlier, this to me is fun. It's not elite football. But let's be honest, I don't think very many of us thought we were going to see a full slate of elite football. I didn't think we were going to see an AFC where the Chiefs were 7-2 and the Bills were 7-2 and the Dolphins were 7-2 and Pittsburgh was 6-4 and Cleveland was 7-2. Like, I didn't expect a lot of teams to be, after week 11, to be 8 wins, maybe 9 wins, because everyone who's expected to play well played well. I mean, I expected some attrition here. But the one team I did not expect to be near the bottom of the AFC, and that's the Chargers. And going to Green Bay and losing to a team as young as Green Bay is and as trying to come together like Green Bay is, this team is giving up a season of pure talent. Pure talent. They are just way too good to be 4-6. Way too good. They've now lost 4 of their last 6 games. And they've got a lot of work to do to get back to this. And Brandon Staley and his snap back, I'm confident, response to a reporter.
I'm running the defense. Stop asking.
Stop asking. That shows me a man that is really, really unhinged. He is not taking this well. And he shouldn't. But at the same time, he knows. I'm out.
Yeah.
I can't. There's nothing I can do. I'm out.
I mean, it's derailed. It's done. Season's over.
Quiet conversations that he's having are, I'm going to be looking for another job.
Yep.
I am not winning these games. I should be winning these games. And even if I get this team into the postseason, I'm going to have to do something miraculous. Because, again, that's too talented of a quarterback. That is too talented of a roster to be blowing it, being 4-6 after 10 games.
And just, I mean, you know, if I told you beforehand that, hey, Tony, a quarterback in this game is going to throw for 332 yards and 2 touchdowns, yeah, who would you assume?
Not Jordan Love.
I mean,
right?
I don't even know what to say anymore.
But here's the thing. You want to run the defense and stop people.
Yeah.
I mean, they're giving up 24 points a game. How good is this defense that you can stand up there and say you're confident in the defensive play calling? Because you have too much pride to be willing to say, I got to give this to somebody else. And I get it. Listen, when you are hired for a reason, and that reason is you are a defensive coordinator, you want to be... You don't want to admit that you can't be a defensive coordinator anymore. You can't call the defensive plays. It's ridiculous. Ridiculous. But like I said, like they're 4-6. They're behind Denver in the standings. They're behind Las Vegas in the standings. This was a team that should have been challenging Kansas City for the division lead. I mean, they should be at least 6-4.
If not more.
If not more. How many one-score games are you going to lose before you realize if you get the right guy at head coach, maybe that flips the other way for you. Maybe that flips in a different direction.
It's like I was telling you before. It's like, okay, last week, okay, the Lions, I get it. You know, the Lions are having a magical run. This has been a great team. But your big wins can't be coming against Zach Wilson and the Jets or Tyson Bagent and the Bears.
No, it's like in college football. Like, if you're an SEC coach, you don't get to keep your job because you won the 4 non-conference games against easy pickings and then maybe win 1 or 2 games against some decent teams in the conference. You got to beat the teams in the conference. They've got to beat good football teams. They're beating good football teams consistently, and they're losing to bad teams too.
Yeah, and then we got a game next Sunday night. Ravens,
right.
Put all your money on the Ravens. It's not going to be pretty.
this crazy league. All right, more on this, especially in the late afternoon games, as the Bills righted the ship and Brock Purdy was perfect. We'll talk about that coming up next as Wake Up Call continues.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we'll continue along on Wake Up Call. Glad you could be with us at 15 minutes. Joel Klatt will join us, Fox Sports. I worked with Joel in Denver, man. His career is just like Josh Dobbs, the astronaut, shooting to the stratosphere. Now he's the voice of college football. I would put him higher than anybody in the college football media world. Like even Paul Feinbaum. I'd put him on top of that. He really speaks his mind. He's opinionated. He's a very good analyst. Really knows the sport. Knows everybody within the sport. Played at Colorado. So Joel Klatt will join us coming up in 15 minutes. We'll talk to him about where we are at heading into rivalry week. Ohio State and Penn State. Michigan held on. Beat Maryland. I was wondering if that game would go Maryland's way, but Michigan held on and won that one. And now they've got one more game without Harbaugh. So we'll talk to him about that and playoff committee. Georgia's rolling. Georgia is rolling now. I mean, seriously, they crushed Tennessee, crushed them. They got Brock Bowers back. Everything about, well, is Georgia looking like Georgia? I don't know. That was real. That was real. And it's not real now. They're really, really strong. So we'll talk to him about that coming up in 15 minutes. So we're back to the NFL. Kansas City, Philadelphia tonight, Monday Night Football. Again, a Super Bowl rematch. And we don't get that very often. And not only that, but the two top teams in the NFL. The Chiefs are 7-2, and the Eagles are 9-1. And this is going to be a good defensive game, too. This is going to be a good defensive game. The Chiefs are allowing like 16 points a contest. Their defense is really chipping in for Kansas City. You kind of think it's Mahomes and their offense and it's firepower. Their defense has been doing great. Dallas cruised over Carolina. No surprise there. But, I mean, if you're 7-3 and you're the Cowboys, if you're a Cowboys fan, do you go, smoke and mirrors, man, smoke and mirrors. I expected the team to beat Carolina. They'll beat Carolina. But if they were to have played, Philadelphia, they might be on the on the losing end. It's a roller coaster for Dallas. But the one good thing that did come about is Jerry Jones and Jimmy Johnson are good buddies again.
Yeah.
Isn't that nice? That's sweet.
Time heals all wounds, Tony.
Time does heal wounds. They won Super Bowls together, but they had a parting of ways because they're both strong-willed, egotistical guys. That was like 30 years ago. And now they're mending fences and getting into the Hall of Fame. Congratulations on that one for Jimmy Johnson. Well done. But yeah, it's like, when you get to be 80, you start going, am I going to still hold a grudge? It's not a Hatfield and McCoy type of thing. I'm going to pass it through the generations. But Brock Purdy and the San Francisco 49ers go to 7-3. Purdy was fantastic. 333 yards passing, 3 touchdowns, perfect passer rating. He said something a lot of us, I think, agree with. He was asked about what the what having a perfect passer rating meant. He goes, I don't even know how that's done.
I don't either.
So congratulations, Brock
Purdy.
You're joining the right club.
What is what's the number again? Or 159.7 or something?
Pay attention.
I don't even know how they come up with that number.
Yeah, it's a mathematical formula, but
yeah.
It's 21 of 25 for 333 and 3 touchdowns.
Why not make it 100?
Why don't you make it easy like the metric system?
Exactly.
Like why don't we just make 100s perfect and then make it like a grade? So if you get like an 85, it's like a B.
But then at least we know what you're referring to too.
Put it in some level reference. You know? Yeah.
He was 89.7. Oh man, but you know that's really really good.
Like, don't make it so complicated. Like, make it easy for guys like me who don't want to do crazy math.
Instead, you get like 159 point something, and you're like, that doesn't make sense.
Why can't we do it like Celsius? 100 is boiling, 0 is freezing. Why don't we just do it that way?
No, we got to do 212 and 32.
I was following a Gordon Ramsay recipe one time.
Uh-oh.
I know, this is how moronic I am. So it was a turkey recipe. It was for Christmas. And I was like, it was really good-looking turkey. And I said, all right. And Gordon Ramsay was putting together the turkey. And he goes, put this in the oven for just 15 minutes at 220 or something. And it was just to get the skin brown. And then you were going to take it out. And you were going to do some things. And you were going to put it back in to really cook. But you wanted to get the butter that was on the skin to, like, really make it brown.
Kind of create a seal, right?
Right, to create a seal. So he said, like, put it in at, like, 215 or something. So I did, but he meant 215 Celsius. And I went, oh, okay. So he wanted your oven really, really, really hot because you wanted to crisp the skin. And then you were going to take it out. You're going to throttle down the temp a little bit. And then you were going to put the turkey back in for like 2 hours or 3 hours or whatever it is. But you wanted it golden brown right away. And then he was going to put bacon on top of it. But I put it in at 200, which is basically warming pizza rolls.
Yeah.
That's about the temperature you put into, like, warm pizza rolls. And I didn't dawn on me that it was Celsius until I took it out and went, that didn't do anything. And I listened to it again. And I went, oh, he's British.
Yeah.
I got some math to do.
What was the other thing? I remember you telling me about the turkey that for as long as you cook it, that's how long it needs to sit.
Yes, that was the other bit of advice. And since it's coming up on Thanksgiving, this was the other bit of Gordon Ramsay turkey advice. For however long it's in the oven, that's how long you should rest it. That was his advice. Which, by the way, in the history of my family, from my grandmother cooking turkeys to my dad to me, my wife, I don't think I've ever let a turkey rest for as long as it's been in the oven.
No.
I let it rest, but I don't think I've ever had a turkey sit out for 3 hours.
I think usually we're about an hour.
About an hour. That's about right, an hour.
And normally for me, it's not for to rest. It was for, I just want it to cool down so I can actually cut into it.
Right, exactly. Because you want that juices to start to absorb again, but I don't think three. He literally was like, make the flavor 10 times better. And I'm like, 10 times better? 10 times better? Don't just use those words. That means something.
Yeah, and the other problem he probably doesn't face is that when you do have a group of people over, you know, people coming over and just like stealing a little section, just, right, you know, cutting a little sliver off. You're not even going to notice.
So that's what he said. He said when he was cooking for master chefs in Paris when he was younger, they made him do that. Mm. Cook it for 3 hours, rest it for 3 hours. So I don't think I have the patience for that.
No.
That bird is sitting on its resting tray for three hours, it ain't going to last.
I'll be honest with you. I probably have more patience resting a turkey for 3 hours than sitting through another Chargers game.
That's true. Same thing with the Steelers offense. What would you rather do, watch a turkey rest or the Steelers move up and down the field?
Well, I mean,
stare at a turkey reabsorbing its juices or Kenny Pickett trying to complete a pass?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Are you sure? Like what you just said was, you know, is a false question because you said moving up and down the field.
I don't really
remember seeing the Steelers moving up and down the field.
What a joke this offense is. What an absolute joke this team is offensively.
Yeah. Mine defensively.
No, defensively fine.
No. You're defensively fine. I'm offensively fine. We should put our teams together. We're winning all the Super Bowls.
We're winning everything. Seriously. It's like people told me this. They were like, oh, the Steelers, huh? They go in up at Brown, no Deshaun Watson. I go, don't matter. If the offense can't move, I don't care who they play. Like, they're lucking out on these victories. But I don't care if the Browns have a rookie quarterback. They can't score. And by the way, the Browns defense is for real.
That might carry
them just enough to keep rolling along and get into the postseason. That defense is great. But that's not the Steelers. That's not the excuse for the Steelers. Their offense stinks.
Now, if you're the Browns, you keep rolling.
It's predictable and stinks.
You keep rolling with DTR or...
Or do you go with...
Flacco.
I think you go with DTR until he can't play anymore. Like, until you realize, okay... Until
he shows his real stripes and then you're like... Yeah, no, you're not that guy.
Because this is what's plagued the Jets. The Jets' connection to Zach Wilson and this hubris of it's going to work, it's going to work, it's going to work, it's going to work. It didn't work. And now they're out. I think they're out. At 4-6, they're out.
Yeah.
Like whatever feeling you had about maybe just hanging around just enough for Rodgers to come back and just do something. Doesn't matter if they're the 7th seed in the playoffs. But that idea that Rodgers may be pushing the envelope, but getting back on that field week 16, week 17, I think it's flushed down the toilet because they can't win games with Zach Wilson at quarterback. Now, I didn't expect them to win in Buffalo. I think Buffalo was going to play a bounce back game, but Buffalo was a bit vulnerable. Firing Ken Dorsey, looking like a complete mess on Monday Night Football, but they didn't look like a mess last night. They played great. They were clicking. But the Jets... They've blown this by making it about proving all of them right about Zach Wilson without going out and getting Josh Dobbs, without going out and getting somebody else. I know it's hard. You've got a lot of money tied up in, and it's hard to predict. It's playing Monday morning quarterback to use a pun. It's easy to say, well, and we didn't know Josh Dobbs was going to do this in Minnesota's system.
And listen,
I get it.
Honestly, too, I don't believe that Aaron's going to come back in 3 weeks.
No, I don't think so either.
Come on.
No, he's not.
Be real.
I'm going to save your season. But if anything, it was maybe the last game in the beginning of the playoffs, but that was even pushing. All right, Joel Klatt's going to join us next. We're going to talk some college football with him. Coming up, it's Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.
This is Brett Musburger, and you are listening live to Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio with my main man, Tony D.
All right, as we head into the Thanksgiving week, we've got the rivalry weekend in college football, these huge games. Obviously, Michigan and Ohio State is the biggest one as the teams are in the top four. College Football Playoff Committee rankings will be coming out on Tuesday. When I grew up in New England, I grew up in New Hampshire, and college football is not big there. It's more of a NFL, it's more pro teams. But I loved college football very early. I made no bones about it when I was in high school that I wanted to go to a college that had a bigger college football presence. I ended up at South Carolina in my freshman year, and I didn't realize how big a rivalry game was on the level. I had grown up watching Michigan, Ohio State. I knew about it, but I wasn't part of it until I went to my first South Carolina Clemson game. And when I went there, that's when it really started to hit me how big it was. The whole week, it was bonfires, it was everything leading up to the game. It was a conversation about all the history of the games. And to see, I remember this old lady
was wearing Clemson gear, was making fun of me and my friend, because South Carolina lost that game my freshman year, 45-0. We didn't have our starting quarterback, and it was a complete disaster. But, man, it was just old lady picking on you because they're beating the team is awful. During college football season, leading game analyst Joe Klatt spends more time on the road than at home. He has racked up plenty of big-time travel tips for calling top games around the country. And ahead of his broadcast booth duties at the upcoming Big Ten championship game, Klatt has partnered with Hampton by Hilton to share how you can drum up your game with traveling for the holidays. He joins us now on our Progressive Insurance guest line. Joel Klatt, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, Tony. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much. All right, let's talk a little Michigan. Before we get to the game in the Ohio State and the way they're playing, where are you on this? Is it a nothing burger? Is it everything on this sign-stealing scandal? As people have tried to decide what level of importance this accusation is, what do you make of that?
Well, I don't know if I wouldn't categorize it of, like, how big is it or not. There was a rule broken, you know. So regardless of how much of an advantage you feel like it gave them or level of infraction, so on and forth, and so on, it was an infraction. And so to me, I feel like I've tried to be very consistent, Tony. And what I've tried to do is remain in the camp that says, okay, here's these allegations. Let's let the process play out. Let's get as many firm, concrete details and facts as we have. Let's let the evidence be what the evidence is. And then once that materializes, then let's make decisions based on the way that evidence plays out. And I think that's what the Big Ten has done. Obviously, the NCAA investigation is going to drag on because that's what NCAA investigations do. But from the Big Ten's perspective, I think they felt not only pressure from the other schools in the league, but maybe the other presidents as well with the Joint Executive Committee. And that pressure was really stemming from one fact. The fact being is that this took place, and they can prove it and have evidence, that this took place this season, and that they feel like the rule was broken this season. And they wanted to make sure that the punishment was also enforced this season, or some type of consequence was thrown on them this season. I think that's the most important part. So to me, it's not necessarily about the level, if you will. If we start arguing about, you know, the level of infraction, I think we're arguing about the wrong thing. The fact remains is there was an infraction. There's evidence of an infraction, and so that's why you're seeing the punishment come down. And to be fair, someone's got to be the guy that embodies the program, and generally that's the head coach. I thought for a while that this would be more of a financial penalty, whether it was both Jim and the program or just the program. I thought it was going to be more of a financial penalty, but it's pretty clear that the influence from the other coaches and programs and presidents and athletic directors around the Big Ten, I think that they made it very clear to Tony Petitti that they wanted Jim punished to some extent, and that's what's happened.
Now, you've seen them twice without Jim Harbaugh on the sidelines. What, if anything, is missing without him on that Michigan team?
Yeah, I think that the effect is really felt just in the critical moments where you need the head coach to be the voice that everyone follows. Not that Sherrone Moore can't be that, because he's done a wonderful job, let's face it, in the last couple of weeks, both against Penn State and then last week against Maryland. And last week against Maryland, for the first time really all year, this team was really in a tough, tight ball game with decisions that had to be made in the fourth quarter. And he goes for it on fourth down. That was a big decision, obviously, and gets it. If he doesn't get that, then Michigan's in a precarious spot. So that's what they feel. And then the other part of this is just the distraction of it all. And trust me, I was on a team that had a lot of distractions, outside noise and outside investigations into our coaching staff when I played. And this is a long time ago, but I can tell you that it weighs on you. And it's tough every day to remain consistent and remain focused on what your task is. And that, you know, mental fortitude weighs on you, and it can become tiring. So as this drags on, and I think we saw a little of this in the effect of Michigan's performance against Maryland, but as this continues to move on, I'm just very interested to see how focused they can stay and how much energy that they have as a team, in particular in what will be an incredibly emotional environment this week against Ohio State.
What's the key in that game? Where do you see what the storyline might be between the Buckeyes and the Wolverines?
Tony, I was having a little hard time hearing you. I believe that you asked about what the storyline might be between Ohio State and Michigan.
The factor of that game.
So to me, the factor really boils down to two things. One is the ability of Michigan to protect the passer. That's actually been a bit of an issue the last 2 weeks, and they've had to play around that. I think one of the reasons that they ran the ball 32 straight times against Penn State isn't just that they could, which they did a wonderful job of doing that, but it was very clear early in the game in the first two series that they were going to have a hard time protecting against that speed rush of Penn State, and they had to adjust. So their ability to protect Kyle McCord, who isn't 100% right now, and he's not moving around as well as he probably was earlier in the season, their ability to protect against a team that can really get after the quarterback, maybe doesn't have the sack numbers that we would expect out of Ohio State, but certainly is a team that can get after the quarterback. That's going to be huge. And then from Ohio State's perspective, I think it's really one question that I have. He's had a really good year from a production standpoint, but Kyle McCord, to me, is the question mark. He's had a low floor that they've had to play around and manage at times this season, and then when he's been good, they've been excellent. And so with the increased production out of Travion Henderson in the last 4 weeks, with the talent on the outside, with the way the defense has played, haven't given up a touchdown, I believe, in the last couple of weeks, it really comes down to Kyle McCord and how well he's going to play. If he plays his best, they're going to be very difficult to beat.
People look at Georgia and they want to compare this to the other Georgias. Is that fair, or and how do you view the 2023 Bulldogs?
I think the only way that this Georgia team can be looked at and not in a favorable light is when you compare them to the other Georgia teams versus the other teams that they would potentially play this year.
Yeah.
That's an unfair comparison because they don't have to play their former selves, if you will. What I love about Georgia, Tony, is that they are clearly a dynasty. And what dynasties do is that they know that they need to play their best football at the right time. And they peak at the right time, just like the Patriots used to do. How do you get to 10 Super Bowls? Well, it's because when all the chips are in the middle of the table, the other teams knew that they had to beat Tom Brady, and a lot of times in Foxborough. Well, that's what's starting to happen with Georgia. When the chips are in the middle of the table, guess what? You're going to have to beat Georgia when they're playing their best, and that's very difficult to do. This is a very good team. I like Carson Beck a lot. As Bowers gets more healthy, they're 100%, and they're going to be a tough out, and it's going to be really hard to pick anybody else to win a national championship when this team is going for their third.
Joel Cladigan partnering up with Hampton by Hilton. Joel, thank you so much for joining us, man. I've watched you since our time in Denver. Your career has skyrocketed, and I'm so happy to see you on Saturdays, my friend. Thank you so much.
Hi, man. It's been great to join you, and I would just say a big thanks to Hampton by Hilton for allowing me to kind of get out there and talk about college football, which I love. And also, as you're preparing and your listeners are preparing to travel, so whether it's Thanksgiving or over the holidays for Christmas or other holidays, just know that the consistency that I rely on, you can rely on as well. That consistency comes in the form of location. They constantly get it right at Hampton by Hilton, their service, their comfortable spaces to work, sleep, plenty of room, all the different things. And then if you're like me and you have a family, or you're like me and you have to have breakfast to function in the morning, their free hot breakfast is a game changer. So big thanks to them for setting this up, and I appreciate your time and having me on.
You got it. Joel Klatt, thank you for joining us, Fox Sports. Again, presented by Hampton by Hilton, talking a little college football. We will continue on Wake Up Call. Thanks for joining us here on a good Monday as we continue along.